This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, are you? I don't want to alarm you, but there's someone behind you right now. Don't look! It's what he's going to expect. Now, for the next hour or so, just listen to the Cubby House podcast. He'll go away after then. So sit down, look straight ahead, and listen, and you'll be okay. Right? This is episode number 21.
Hello.
It's actually Cookie that's behind you. And that is why you should be exceptionally scared.
Hello, this is show number 21 of the Cubby House podcast. I'm Cookie.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jack.
And I think we've hit the triple lucky number.
That's it. There's three of us and seven is a lucky number. So that's how we get to a 21.
Woohoo.
Bit of math for you today.
Yes. Math is hard. How have we all been?
Uni keeps me busy, but it keeps me happy. Also, I feel as though I've been in rather high demand at the moment. Everyone wants a piece of Jack, but I don't have enough time to spread it all around.
You're getting a bit spread too thin, are you, Jack?
Hopefully it doesn't impact on my studies. Because as much as I like Mantail...
Oh, really? Wow. Yes. You're in high demand, are you?
Mm-hmm. So what about Mr. Rhino Ryan?
Oh, I wish I could say the same thing. I've been very boring. I've been very busy, but very boring. God, why didn't Russell tell me that, you know, being the Vic Bear's secretary was not glamorous as what I thought it would be?
That's because he's just glamorous in general.
Well, that's true. And what about yourself, Cookie? What have glamorous. You been up to?
Me, playing on Azeroth, running around for work, and generally enjoying life while I can.
Yay!
But I would also like to thank all those who helped us out with the last debate.
Absolutely.
Size does matter out of the lead.
They were just being prudes. The audience picked wrong.
No, they didn't. They picked right. Size doesn't matter.
That's what everybody says in public.
Well, everybody just... All three of you use the same argument that, you know, big cocks are better. And it's like, well, you've just pissed off about 70% of the population out there. So,
okay, you've won this round.
Get you next time, Gadget.
Yes.
Next time, Gadget.
We do have more debates coming up in future months, so keep your eye out for that.
We love debating.
But for now, we do have a few topics today.
Yes, the super hot, super spunky, and super intelligent, might I add, Mr. Wayne Hoffman has allowed us to use his short story, A Place at the Table, which he wrote with his mother. He's not here.
Oh, I was getting all moist then when you said, oh, Wayne Hoffman. Oh, my heart was a flutter.
So we'll get to that a bit later.
We've also got the regular What Did We Learn This Week, and we have had some feedback about our attacks and anties on WoW. We are going to call this show the last show of WoW content because I do have a few points to bring up and I believe you have a few angst you want to finalise with.
No, I just had a rebuttal to the feedback that we've had for WoW, so that's fine. We've also got another topic about X-Tube etiquette. It's been a while since we've had an etiquette section, so why not make it about porn?
You know, etiquette, porn.
I mean, the two would just go hand in hand, really.
Time and time again.
I mean, you've watched, like, you know, what's that craptacular reality show? Let It to Lady. So, I mean, that's practically porn right there. Maybe it should be like, you know, Cubbit to Cubby or something.
Yeah, well, I keep saying tennis is porn without taking your clothes off.
Well, there's lots of ball playing, there's lots of grunting, there's lots of sweating. I guess it pretty much is.
Yep. But on the subject of porn etiquette, don't leave the really hardcore stuff lying around, particularly if you've got housemates. Pack up your tissues when you're done.
Well, we'll get to the X-Tube, you know, we'll get to the porn etiquette in a minute.
Yes.
Also, there are some alarming statistics coming out on the Suck It and See survey that was done by the Burnett Institute. I'll be getting to that a bit later. That in Dr. Jack Feelgood section.
Well, I know I feel good when I jack, so...
Dr. Feel Good.
We've also got a few things about how we help somebody come out, not necessarily through the usual means of just take them out to places, but how you would approach them perhaps online, through games perhaps, or other means that they might feel comfortable with.
No, I think we were going to be done with World of Warcraft.
No, this was going to be the last show.
The last one. Brace yourselves.
7x3, it's show 21 for the Cubby House.
And don't turn around. A neurotic World of Warcraft player is behind you.
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't be outside.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Story Time on the Cubby House podcast. Today's story is A Place at the Table by Wayne Hoffman, who wrote it based on his true-to-life experiences, which he wrote with his mother, believe it or not. It's a story about being gay, about Judaism, about family, and about coming to terms with things. This was recorded at Joy 94.9 by Sandra and Michael of Aleph Melbourne, a social club for religious and ethnically Jewish people in that are also homosexual and lesbian in Melbourne, so you can look them up on Google. So enjoy.
This is how I remember. I was walking out the front door. You stopped me in the living room.
Leave the earring at home.
I pretended not to know what you were talking about. I'm going to be late for orientation, I said. I had come home after freshman year in college to work another summer at camp. I was one of the senior staff, and I had responsibilities.
If you're trying to make a statement, camp isn't the place to make it. You're trying to make a statement, aren't you?
I'd been wearing that earring hoping to provoke just such a question, hoping you would ask me so I wouldn't have to tell you. Yet I was caught off guard and fumbled for words. Somewhere in there was a yes and a promise to talk later.
I was glad that you'd left. At that point, I couldn't talk. I'd suspected for months. Ever since you came home for Passover with that earring in your ear, that blew me away. I didn't say anything at the time, but I knew the saying, left is right and right is wrong. Your earring was in your right ear. When you left the next day to go back to school, I went into your room. I found some magazines and newspapers. I started adding things up. Then I looked around at all your posters to see where all those rock stars wore their earrings.
You didn't know I'd been having a recurring nightmare since I left Washington for school the year before. In the dream, I would run upstairs to my room to find you tearing down my posters. You'd rip them down and I'd scream, but you wouldn't stop. I would wake up gasping with a pounding heart.
While I waited for you to get home from orientation that afternoon, it finally sank in. I'd like to think my first reaction was worrying about you. But my first reaction was, what will everybody think? I can deal with this. It doesn't matter to me. But what will other people think and say? I guess it's because I grew up in the 50s. My identity and esteem was reflected through other people's eyes. I thought people would never look at you again as the brilliant kid that you are. They'd only see that you were gay and nothing else. The second thing that hit me was worrying about your health. Fear of AIDS and fear of you getting beaten up.
I had the same fears.
While you were out of the house, I told your father. He put his hands to his head. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I told him there was nothing anyone could do about it. But he wasn't ready to face you when you came in. So I came downstairs to talk to you. Alone.
I remember that you cried, but not a lot. You asked me questions about my health, whether I was being careful. You told me you weren't ready for me to tell other people. I told you it was too late. I was already out on campus, protesting in Boston, writing for the school newspaper. You weren't ready to hear this. You told me that you loved me, that nothing had changed. Yet, something had changed.
I was born on Passover, the night of the first Seder. My father always made a fuss and celebrated my birthday at the Seder, regardless of when the holiday fell on the calendar. It was always a special time for me. The fondest memories of my childhood were from Passover. It's still my favourite holiday.
Passover has always been my favourite too. The holiday that means the most to me. I don't come home for Rosh Hashanah. I never made a fuss over Hanukkah. I've even missed Thanksgiving more than once. But a trip to Washington for Passover is set in stone. Sometimes we have dozens of people for the Seder, but without fail, every year, we had all the Hoffmans and the Hermans, our parallel family. An oldest son my brother's age, a middle daughter my sister's age, and a youngest son my age. We have become one extended family.
We are grandparents and parents and children and grandchildren together at the table. We have had generations in there, and we watch the family grow from one Passover to the next.
Our Seder isn't strictly traditional. We have used children's toys to illustrate the 10 plagues, created a rap version of the song Echad Mi Yodea, and turned the search for the Afikoman into a competitive event. But underneath it all, there's a strong sense of ritual. The kids lead our Seder, and every year we divide up the parts. Who gets to sing the Kiddush, for example, and who gets stuck reading the passages with all those rabbis' names in Aramaic? One part never changes, though. There's a story in the Haggadah about four sons. The wise son, the simple son, the contrary son, and the son who does not even know how to ask a question. It doesn't matter who else gets which other part. I always get to be the wise son.
I always had very fixed ideas as a mother about what my children's lives would be like. When you told me that you were gay, I was angry that you could do this to me, that you wouldn't be giving me what I had planned for your life. Family. Children. What makes me sad, I told you, is that I'll never be able to look around the Seder table and see all my grandchildren.
I never told you this. After I went back to Boston that fall, I fell for a guy named Brian. He was waspy as can be, a hardcore Protestant with blonde hair and pink skin. His family was wealthy, in a way I had never known, Mayflower stock, on Philadelphia's social register. Brian was going home to Philadelphia for Thanksgiving to attend a friend's coming out cotillion, and I mean coming out in the old-fashioned sense. Wouldn't people be shocked, he asked, mostly joking, if we went to that cotillion as a couple? Yes, let's do it, I replied, mostly serious. Brian immediately made it clear that this was not an idea he took lightly. It might sound funny, he said, but we could do it for real. I mean, what would other people think? I guess you're right, I said. People would probably die if they saw you walk in with a guy. No, that they would probably handle, he said. They would probably die if I walked in with a Jew.
There's something I never told you, either. After you went back to Boston that fall, I went to Rosh Hashanah services at the synagogue, just like I have every year since your father and I were married. The rabbi gave his sermon, the one he saves for the High Holy Days, when he has this large captive audience. This year, his sermon was about gays. He stood in front of the sanctuary talking about how gay people didn't deserve civil rights, how they were condemned in the Torah. Inside, I was boiling. He was talking about my son. I wanted to scream. I wanted to walk out. I wanted to leave the congregation I'd called home for 25 years. I went home and called your brother. He was in rabbinical school then, and I asked him what to do. He told me to talk to the rabbi one-on-one. But I was afraid that if I said anything to the rabbi, he wouldn't let you participate in your brother's wedding next summer. He'd be officiating and he could forbid you from standing on the bima during the ceremony. So I said nothing.
After my sophomore year, I came back to work at camp one last summer. I decided to take time off from school and stay through the fall, working in Washington. I moved back into my old bedroom. That's when I met Mark. He lived on Capitol Hill. He was 25. He was Catholic. I spent every weekend with him, watching television in your family room, eating dinner at your kitchen table, and driving around the city in your car. One year after I came out to you, you were face to face with my first lover.
Most people would look at Mark and say he's drop-dead gorgeous. It's horrible to say, but my first reaction was that he looked like a shagatz. If you were going to be with a guy, I'd at least hoped he'd be Jewish. I never had a problem with Mark as a person. I had a problem with the fact that my son had a lover. Even that word, lover, is hard for me. It conjures up a sexual picture, and I can't see any of my children that way. It would have been a problem with anybody. But as time passed, I got to know Mark, not as your lover, but as a human being. And I've learned to love Mark as a son.
The next spring, I flew home for the Seder. Mark wanted to come, but I didn't want to make waves. I was afraid I'd push you too far, so I didn't say anything. I didn't wear an earring. I didn't make any statements. I came to the Seder alone.
I didn't want him there because everybody else at the table was having a regular planned life. And you'd be different. I didn't know if I was ready, but I didn't not invite him. If you'd have pushed for Mark to come, if you'd have even just asked me, he would have been there. Yes, it would have been uncomfortable. but he would have been there if you had asked.
Mark was furious. He was angry with me for not standing up for him. He demanded that this would not happen again. I made excuses. People only bring their spouses to our seders, not their boyfriends. A non-Jew would be bored. There wasn't room around the dining room table for one more person. All lies.
A year later, you brought Mark with you to the Seder. We had about 25 people that year, and the last person at the table had to get up and fold his chair every time somebody wanted to walk by. I remember how big the crowd was that year, but I don't remember it being a big deal that Mark was there. I don't think we ever discussed whether or not he had come, and I don't think I worried about what anybody would think. I guess enough time had passed that it didn't matter anymore.
It mattered to me.
Nobody asked who Mark was. The Hermans already knew, and our other guests must have drawn their own conclusions. It was no longer important. I can't even picture where you were sitting.
Mark was sitting next to me. We were both a bit quieter than usual, but I still sang my songs and read my parts. Once again, I was the wise son. I am always the wise son. But this time, Mark was a simple son. Part of the family.
If you liked that and wanted to read more of Wayne Hoffman's stuff, or even see a picture of him, go to hardthenovel.com. I read his book Hard. It's a great book, so support him and check it out. It gets the Cubby House, or should I say the Jack Chapman seal of approval. Yay!
So just go to Borders and you'll see Jack's face on the cover with a little sticker saying, you know, two thumbs up and everything.
Yeah, take that, Oprah. Now, living is a process of continued learning, and we try to embrace that at the Cubby House podcast. And as such, we've got a segment that we do every so often that we call What Did We Learn This Week? Can we have a fanfare for that, Cookie? That was a nice fanfare.
That was a groin-grabbingly awesome fanfare.
Oh, I think that's almost a Simpsons reference there.
Is it?
Yes.
The Simpsons has done everything. God.
So, what do we learn this week? Ryan.
Well, the topic that I wanted to discuss is something that pretty much everybody knows anyway, but I just wanted to delve into it a little bit more. Hollywood is seriously running out of ideas, and I'm guessing everybody knows this with the amount of remakes and things that we've got going on.
And reboots too. It's not enough to remake it, you've got to start from the beginning again.
Well, that's right. I mean, just very quickly, a movie that they're doing that to, like they're making a prequel of, is Nightmare on Elm Street. But the two films that I just wanted to quickly discuss and say, oh my god, I can't believe Hollywood was serious when they considered this, is they're making Pac-Man the movie.
What?
Yes, I'm serious. And they're making Monopoly the movie.
I can imagine like a Monopoly being like a fun childish version of Wall Street. Like, green is good! Yay! Foreclosure!
Yeah, I could see Monopoly come the Rat Race movie. Kind of, maybe.
No. Well, yeah, I mean, I can see it, but I mean, like, why? Can't they just... Is the writer's drought that bad? Seriously?
Mm.
Like, I've got so many ideas for screenplays and things, and give me a go, yeah, pricks.
What about Candyland the movie? They're making one of those.
Are they seriously?
They are. And Asteroids the movie.
Well, see, I was okay.
And Battleship, like the B4, you sunk my battleship kind of battleship.
Wow, really?
Hmm.
See, that was a shame that they didn't do that in, like, Hunt of Red October or something. You know, just, I don't know. But it's just getting worse. And just seriously, get some originality, guys. Cookie, what did you learn?
Me? I learned don't use the wrong type of lead for running a heater.
Is that why you're missing an arm or?
No. That's why you see a new heater in this room.
Ah.
Yes.
What did you do?
Well, I went to use the heater on full, which draws a full 10 amps, which is what something is rated to. It's how much power is drawn through a cable. And if you use the wrong type of cable, it tends to heat up. So thankfully, I didn't cause a fire, but had it been left for another 5 hours the way it was going, it would have. So please, peoples, check your leads. If you're going to plug a heater, plug it directly into the wall. Don't plug it into a power board. Yeah, electrical tip. Yay.
Wow, I feel a little bit more masculine right now.
What we need is one of those shooting stars. The more you know.
The more you learn.
And now we know, and knowing is half the battle.
Indeed.
G.I. Joe.
What about you, Jack?
This week I've been delving into the dark history of psychology, that behind all the chic offices and all the pretty terms and all the of books that are released, that it actually has an exceptionally dark history. Some of the stories that are coming out of the field, particularly in its early days, are just disastrous.
But you know it to be true.
Well, I wasn't there, so I don't know for sure. Or was I? Don't look behind you, I'm actually there.
And Jack's in drag. Seriously, don't look.
Also, one of the issues that I was kind of been dealing with this week is about how regular diversity amongst people, the difference between people, is pathologized and turned into medical conditions in the Diagnostic Statistics Manual of Conditions things. You know, the DSM. So what you've got is that you've got a billion labels that you could be prescribed or you could be told to as having. Just that it seems as though everybody's got a mental illness these days, that it's not enough for someone to be different. There's something wrong with them.
Well, it's nice to know that there's no such thing as normal.
Well, there is. By what standard are they making these diagnoses unless they've got some kind of idea of normality?
What are you looking at me for? I'm so not sane. I like being different. Embrace your individuality, whatever that slogan is.
What I've got to say to you is, psychology as a field, you've got a lot of splaining to do.
Lucy.
Oh, man. More World of Warcraft. I thought we were done with this. I made a promise to a particular someone. I mean, I made a promise to Facebook that we wouldn't talk about World of Warcraft anymore. And that's binding, you know.
Well, you know what? You technically don't have to.
No.
You're right. I'm going to be a conscientious objector to this subject. And as such, I'm going to sit back. I'm out.
Wow.
Exactly.
Okay, now it's just you and me and everybody else in the free world.
Excellent. Now, Warcraft.
Warcraft.
You and I have been having an ongoing battle.
Not really. I think it's just people are just sick of hearing about it, that's all.
Okay, well, I'm making a statement now. This is the last show about Warcraft.
I'm actually kind of upset. I didn't care about talking about Warcraft. I don't know about it, so I'm just completely ignorant. So if you want to play it, I really don't care about it.
Yay, thank you. The reason I wanted to bring it up is, since I've now been diagnosed by everybody else as being addicted to it, I've been doing a bit of research.
Medical pathology. How did you get back in the room?
I was behind you all along. You can be diagnosed with video game addiction, you know.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
Now let me just fade back into the shadows again.
God, have you got pepper spray on you, Cookie?
Not yet. the main thing I wanted to bring up in this half of the topic is a web show that I've since looked at and thought that was quite funny. For everybody who doesn't play Warcraft, who believes I am an addict, I highly recommend you go watch this show. It is called The Guild, and you can see it at watchtheguild.com. They've brought out a song, which is what dragged me into it. It's called Do You Want to Date My Avatar? It's the introduction to this topic we're talking about that you heard. But it's also about these six characters who are massively addicted. They've got, as Jack would say, they've probably got God knows how many diagnosed problems. And it's the whole funny sequence of what happens away from the game because they're forced to interact with each other through unsocial means.
Well, you introduced it to me just like an hour ago, and I thought it was quite funny.
Yes.
It's very much along the same lines as, everybody knows that I can't stand science fiction, but I thoroughly enjoyed the film Galaxy Quest because it's just a piss take on itself. And this is pretty much along the same lines as that.
Yes. The main characters have all played Warcraft and have all been addicted to it, so they can be very relatable. But it just reminds me that there are people out there that do play Warcraft. They are very sane about how they play it. And if they are playing it a lot, there's probably a good reason why. And that could be temporary, that could be permanent. It's not for us to judge.
Trust me, this summer you'll be having Don't You Want to Date My Avatar as your ringtone after you've finished with The bird. The bird is the word. I know that's a Family Guy reference. I'm sorry, but it's kind of appropriate.
Okay. You're safe from a flag this time.
I'm sorry.
The other topic I wanted to bring up, which gets us into our next topic. Welcome back, Jack, to the microphone.
The door's jammed.
Oh, sorry. Jack, are you wearing makeup now?
No. It's just... accentuates my cheekbones.
You've been following our listeners again, haven't you?
They're just so attractive.
They are. They're gorgeous. Like this guy listening right now. God, he's hot.
I'd do him in a second.
Yes. So what did I miss out on?
Well, we're coming up to our next topic, which is helping other people come out through the means of things like Warcraft.
You're going to have to contextualize this one.
Okay. Say somebody that I know through high school has a sibling that is having trouble coming out, doesn't know anybody, doesn't know me personally, and is having trouble trying to out themselves, to everybody else, and make sense of it all. And they tell me, well, they're currently massively playing on Warcraft. And I say, well, come join my server of the game. So come and join my group. And then I can talk to them about that through the game. Now, in times gone by, people used to use MSN and other forms of social connection, but in this particular case, it's using the front of a game to do things socially, to build up confidence with the person who you might not really know, to then eventually say, well, let's all get together and do something social. So not only have I been talking to them, but he's talking to other people in the group, and he comes out with a group of people who he can relate to primarily at this point through the game. Your thoughts, gentlemen?
It's funny you should mention the use of MSN and things like that, because that's exactly what popped into my head when you mentioned it. I remember back in the days of when the internet first started, and I was going on chat rooms like, I think it was like Lycos and Yahoo and just...
Gay.com?
Gay.com later on, but when I first started out, because I wasn't, you know...
Back in the old days when you used to have a dial-up and you used to pay by the hour.
That's right, and good old Windows 95. Yeah, it's just basically a glorified version of that. I think that it's a good way to meet or to mingle in that way because it gives them a safety area. Like if they run out of things to talk about because they don't know what to talk about as far as, you know, I don't know what to do. Should I go to this place? Should I go to this sauna? Should I read these books? What should I do? You've always got that safety area of just talking about World of Warcraft, for example.
You've given me the blue steel look, that you kind of got the idea that I have some kind of impression about this one way or another.
Well, I'm sure, Jack, you're one of the most opinionated souls I know, so I'm sure you have an opinion on this too.
And you've played the game, and I'm assuming you've done guild particular connecting. What's been your experience in this particular fathom of concept?
Well, I could talk about it, but then I'd be breaking the first two rules of the guild. If you don't get that, then you're not going to get that.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't know what you're talking about because I haven't played WoW. So can you explain the first two rules of the guild to the other people like me?
There is no Warcraft. Rule 2, refer to rule 1.
No. First rule of the guild is to not talk about the guild. The second rule of the guild is not to talk about the guild.
Okay.
Fight Club!
Ah, I...
How does that know? But how do you not know that? I was like one of the best films out of the 90s. I mean...
I haven't even seen the film, yet I know the reference.
I know the reference, but how am I supposed to draw the line between World of Warcraft and Fight Club?
Okay, think of World of Warcraft as a combination of every pop culture reference and name you've ever thought of. It's probably been used in there somewhere.
Right, okay.
Okay, I think I've devised some kind of opinion, and that is...
Your opinion is not to talk about it.
No, I'll talk about it. I'm going to break the code of silence, simply because the guild that I was part of is now defunct.
Well, there you go.
I mean, they probably won't break my legs now. They're probably right behind me right now. You're never quite too sure with this online stuff. At any rate... The guild that I was part of was for everyone. That IRL, in real life, they have acronyms for that.
Mm-hmm.
Warcraft, the plethora of acronyms is astounding.
God.
But the thing about it is that it's the idea that it is a fantasy realm, that it is just that, an escape, that generally you don't find that people... Well, they discuss what's going on in their real life, but that's not really what it's about, that you'd find that the guild policy, which Blizzard, Ubisoft, whatever, has at the moment, prohibits guilds being formed for political or ethnic or racial reasons. That the idea is that it is a purely a fantasy thing, that it doesn't really tend to intermingle with politics. I mean, sure, people can use that, and they do, but I don't necessarily know if that's within the intended spirit of the game.
Hmm.
Now, as people kind of move onto it, and as people use it, the way that people are going to engage with that kind of space is going to be quite different. I mean, I think I heard quite recently that they're going to employ outreach workers to actually work within the game to interact with people who perhaps might be playing too much.
For someone who had no opinion, you've covered a lot of areas there.
Oh, thank you. I was just farting it out. I just put a random mix of sociology terms together, and it came out coherently, thank God.
Jack has just won the achievement, the Scientific Approach Award.
Hooray! Do I get a fanfare for that? I think I deserve a fanfare for that.
No, but I think...
Thank you, Cookie. That was a nice fanfare.
I think you get 3 horde points for that.
I want a gold star, too.
And a smiley stamp?
And a smiley... pumpkin stamp.
Oh, a pump? Why pumpkin?
Just because...
Okay.
So, Warcraft, been there, done that, we're over it. My final comments?
Wait, I don't think you actually expressed your opinion about that.
My opinion is coherent because I am in the middle of this situation. I've been put into this situation because of people not knowing how to deal with their relatives in terms of coming out, because they've never come out, they don't know where to go, and they don't know what the best thing to do is. So it's just interesting that this is the next step for me as a mentor to say, okay, well, I will talk to them on their level in this way this time, rather than sitting down for a drink and actually talking to them one-on-one in a social place, which I think for this current generation might be a bit too engaging to start with.
I'm completely 100% over it. And dear listener, if you're not over it, then listen to a goddamn World of Warcraft podcast, because we're not one of those.
Mind you, I do suggest if you want to dig some fun at WoW players, please go to watchtheguild.com and watch all their episodes. It is a funny, funny piss take of the whole concept of Warcraft.
Alright, we need some kind of consensus here. Are we done?
Look, this is the rant that I was going to have. I don't care if we talk about World of Warcraft. It's just that it's a subject that I know nothing about, so I feel left out, and that's why I don't like talking about it. And I don't feel that I have to play the game, or I have to read up about it, or to actually have an opinion about something like this. So, I don't care if it gets brought up. People are getting sick of jokes being made at WoW players' expense. That's fine. But I don't care if it's a situation where WoW can be brought up as an argument topic or something like that.
Also, one last thing. I think that there's a mysterious new page on the Cubby House website, in fact. I think that might be worth bringing up, seeing that it's on our webpage. It's officially linked to us, and by extension, me personally. You've got some splaining to do.
Me? Yes, I do. I have got a guild on the Proudmoore server.
Proudmoore, the gay server.
Yes! Believe it or not, some people on the Proudmoore server don't realise it's a gay server until you imply it. But I've got a Cubby Horde as a guild. It is designed to emulate the values we here at the Cubby House have, and that is, if you're going to play it, don't play it for too long. There is a life to be had. Go and have it. And to play and trade fairly. So, if you'd like to check out the guild page, it is thecubbyhouse.net.au/horde.php. That is my personal guild that I'm running on Warcraft. And hopefully, it will also encourage people who do play Warcraft to listen to the Cubby House as well.
All right, listener. So far, you haven't looked behind you, and that's good. But I want you to follow with me. I want you to take a deep breath and sigh, and then say, thank God that's over. We're done.
I think they say that at the end of every podcast. Yes.
We're done. Done, 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 done.
Wow.
Exactly. Okay, XTube, and for that matter, all pornographic content that is uploaded to public viewing, be it via web streaming or whatever.
But we've got a little etiquette noise to put in. This is, in fact, an etiquette section.
How rude, you can't do that.
Thank you, dear. That's such a wonderful thought.
Etiquette.
That was nice. That was very nice.
I like that.
Yeah. So.
That was a nice etiquette.
The etiquette for today, what do we do for content that's been put up that we have not approved? And give you some example. I do porn photography. I've actually taken photos of people naked, and in some cases, I've been in the photos with them. I've uploaded them to XTube without the person's consent. Now, I want to point out that consent is a big thing. So I've put it up there. What should then happen after that? What is the etiquette approach?
The etiquette is that if you actually come across this, like say for example, if Jack and I are bow chicka wow wowing, getting all steamy and hot in somewhere.
Sorry, when did this happen?
It was before, like, you know, when I...
It's happening behind you right now, but I don't look.
It was when Jack left the room, and that's why the door was jammed, because we were doing stuff against the door. No, if, say, for example, Jack and I shot a porn, and Jack put it on XTube, and I said, what's this all about? Legally, Jack would have to remove it, because there was no consent, there was no mentioning that it was going to be filmed or anything like that. If both parties have consent, God, it's going to be like, every time you hear the word consent, children, have a shot. Yes, both parties need to consent if you're going to have things like that.
Okay, so say somebody's taken a photo of me, and I've come up and I've said, all right, I don't like what you've put up there. You haven't asked me for my permission. Take it down. They don't take it down. Then what?
You can flag it.
I'm sure that you could probably speak to a solicitor and get some legal advice. But in this day and age with Facebook and with Twitter and with blogs and things like that, it's really hard to keep personal content personal.
Right.
All you can do is, I don't know, while I collect my thoughts.
Say I've had photos put up of me and I'm a potentially highly electable official, and those photos can then be used to defame me. Do you think that that's material to take to court for defamation if I have not consented to it?
I think that's a bit, that's one step beyond the issue, actually.
But it can get to that, is what I'm saying. If obviously there's things that have been done without your knowledge or consent, things can actually get to a point where it actually does get taken to court because people are not aware of why you might not want those photos up.
If we do have any political officials willing to do porn, by the way, can you please contact Jack? Because he would love a sugar daddy.
Yeah, I'm looking at you, Mr. Howard. Wow. Maybe if you can get, like, Rudd and... No, not Rudd and Howard, of course not. What you'd have is you'd have our former Prime Minister and former Treasurer doing it together. Well, that's what it is.
Mr. Costello and...
Howard and Costello.
Oh, I thought you were going to... Howard, of course. I thought you were going to talk about the Milky Bar Kid, a.k.a. Kevin Rudd, then.
No. But, yeah, okay.
Okay, I think I've got something to say about this.
No. And that it... You have an opinion?
Oh!
Stop the presses.
Stop the... That's my saying. I haven't said it for a while. You can use it. And that is that once something is on the internet, it's very difficult to try and take something back. That once it's out there, it's practically gone. So I'm in a position quite often where I've had private photographs sent to me in confidence that won't be shared around. Now, there have been instances where I have been tempted to go, oh, look at this, so hot, and send it to another person. But that would be a breach of confidence. And I think that's one of the most important things, is that you've got to really take into consideration the intention of which it was given to you in the first place. Yeah. You've got a personal responsibility, and I suppose you could say a duty of care to the person that intentionally sent that photograph to you, because it doesn't take an awful lot for a single photograph to suddenly become that one that gets spread around to everyone via email or put onto web pages and the like. For example, a podcaster friend of mine who is in the United States at the moment recently established a web page. What it is practically is that you take pictures of bears that you'd like to do on the street with your iPhone or with a picture or with a camera or pictures that you've come across, and you send them in, and he puts it up onto that blog. And I can imagine that it's a rather good idea, or rather interesting, that from a person that probably doesn't know any of these people, and they probably don't know that they're being featured on it, it's probably not all that bad, but the fact that they are real people, and they aren't necessarily aware that they're being included on such a web page is a problem.
Things like that can be used against them. There have been cases where defamation has been an issue. Say, for example, I think there was a porn star, Bobby Blake. He's a very tall African-American guy, and all his porn, he's always been the top, and he's very well endowed, and he's very gruff and stuff. But now he's given up that industry, and he's actually become, of all things, a priest. But because of all this content that's gotten out there, he's trying to say, no, I found the error of my ways, and blah, blah, blah. There was another porn star, I can't remember his name, Ty something or other. He was married, I think he was a school teacher as well. Big, muscly, blonde dude. And again, situation, top, wife found out. I think somebody actually just sent a porn video to his wife and found out that way. What I'm trying to say is here, just think about what you're doing at the time. I mean, that's fine if you want to be all bow chicka wow wow on camera, but just, I would be careful of when you hit stop afterwards, what you're doing with it. Ask the person, get their consent, and if you're loading somebody's video of you don't know anything about them, you just think twice about it. How would you feel if you were in that situation?
I agree with Ryan 100% that the easiest way to prevent material like that going out is to be aware of what could happen when you're actually making it in the first place. As a rule, when it comes to myself, that I don't send out pictures that I wouldn't feel comfortable everybody seeing.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the pictures that I see that are at least on my Facebook page are rather crude, but then not exactly going to bite me in the bum unless I go join the Vatican or go into real public life.
Of which this podcast would probably tarnish your reputation if you became...
immensely.
This podcast...
Pope Cubby Jack the First.
Well, I like to believe that this podcast is perhaps doing more for what I want to do in the future rather than inhibit. So, in conclusion for that topic, use your brain, dumbass.
And ask. In this case, it is not better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Yes, true. Destination unknown.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dr. Feelgood. Dr. Feelgood!
Blasphemy.
Yes, I know. I'm not the Dr. Feelgood, just a Dr. Feelgood. Are we okay with that? No?
How is it blasphemy?
Dr. Feelgood is actually a trademarkable name.
Oh, really? What, the chick that used to be on Fox? Oh, okay. I thought it was like that. Who sang that song? It was Motley Crue. Ah, yes. Yeah, okay.
A Dr. Feelgood is good.
A Dr. Feelgood. Now, as some of you might know, or if you've listened from the previous podcasts, I am a outreach person, or a person on the outreach team with the Victorian AIDS Council. So, occasionally we have meetings and we get informed about the current trends that are going on and how to react to those trends to do our job better, which is informing people about healthy sexuality and more specifically HIV, but also syphilis and the like. And we got a speaking to by a person from the Burnett Institute, which is a medical research place that has been doing the Suck It and See survey. And what they did is that they went around to health clinics, they went around to pubs, clubs, saunas, and what they did is that they put a salty swab into a person's mouth and left it there for 20 minutes while they were filling in a survey about their own identity and sexual activity. And then they took those swabs back and they tested it for HIV. It's a practice which is done cheaply all around the world and also done in the UK, but was barely cleared for use in Australia.
Around the world and UK?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Because I forgot the UK was a part of the world.
The UK isn't part of the world. The UK is the centre of the universe. I mean, geez.
Sorry, please continue.
So what they did is that they compiled statistics about HIV, about the sexual behaviour of certain people, about how they identified. It's not particularly surprising, but of the people that they tested in general, 13.4% of people actually tested positive for HIV. Now, because they were doing testing at sexual health clinics, they felt that that loaded the numbers quite a bit. So at the social venues that they went to, it actually turned out that 9.6% of men tested HIV positive. That was out of 639 men, 61 did. But the thing that people are getting up in arms about, or the people that people are quite concerned about, is that of those 69 or 61 men that tested positive, 19 men out of that or 31% of those that tested positive did not identify or were identified as having an unrecognized HIV infection, which is actually quite alarming because...
They didn't realize they had HIV.
That's right. That 31% is a rather alarming figure, because if you don't really know, then you're not going to change your behavior and you're likely to put other people at risk of infection. So what they generally found is that the people that were unaware of testing positive, they were generally aged in their mid-30s. They were recruited at sex on premises venues. They had reported multiple sex partners in the past 6 months and reported unprotected anal intercourse with casual partners in the last 6 months. Now, that's not particularly surprising, but one of the things that I really want to emphasize is that there is a very strong need for regular sexual health testing. It's the only way around it. I'm curious about what your thoughts about it are.
Me personally, I make a habit of going at least every 6 months, and that's a habit I've built ever since I started playing around, just in general, ever since I was 18, 19. So it's a point with me, but in my social circles, I can recognize that there isn't a greater deal of awareness in terms of your own sexual health and getting it tested regularly. And I'm just curious as to, apart from being in those social circles, what other influences actually cause this ignorance or willingness of ignorance?
Right.
I agree. I get tested every 6 months, mainly due to the fact that when I first got tested, I was about 15, I think, and I had a huge HIV scare. The person who I was given my results from, they stuffed them up with somebody else's, and I was informed that I was actually positive. So after then, I didn't know what to do, and I just instantly went into denial. I need a second opinion. And thank God I did, because I went to 9 other clinics, and every single one of them said, no, you're negative. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going back there again. I don't think that celibacy is really... Say, for example, you haven't had any sexual partners within those 6 months. That doesn't make a difference. Still get yourself tested. Hepatitis, for example, can still be given to you through just merely by a handshake or something like that.
Yep.
Going to IKEA and touching all those lovely little things. Oh, isn't this lovely, honey? Oh, yes, we should get it in blue. Yeah, you can get hepatitis from that. So, yeah, plus, get tested, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, plus the other thing is, you might be tested at one particular point, but HIV might not show for another couple That's of right. weeks or months after that. So,
Now, the 31% unrecognized HIV infection rate is quite high and quite alarming. I think that it's quite good that, despite these statistics, the survey has been conducted, because at least we hope put a scare into... Not put a scare, but probably let people feel slightly less complacent about their own susceptibility and their own vulnerability.
Hmm.
I'm not surprised that it is sort of people that are in their 30s, which is still quite young, that feel that, you know, that they don't need to get tested, because it's usually to do with youth. You feel invincible. You think, no, it doesn't happen to me. It happens to old guys. Oh, it won't happen in a sauna. It'll happen somewhere else. Just little rules. It's just a friend of mine. I'm not going to mention any names or anything. He is a top, and the one time he ever bottomed, the condom broke, and that was the one time he got HIV.
Yep.
You don't have to do anything dangerous. You don't have to do anything, you know, it just happens.
Mm. And in all honesty, it's not just the old, it is very much the young. I have a fair few friends in various locations of my friendships that have got HIV, and for different reasons. Some have had the unfortunacy of having to prostitute themselves. Others have been from committed relationships, casual partners. It comes from anywhere, anyone, anytime. They may not even know it when you actually do the deed. So.
That's right.
But just so I'm imagining, we have quite a few of older listeners who had a sexual health test in the past, and the way that they actually did the testing, I was hearing some horror stories about it while I was doing my training at the VAC, how instead of taking the saliva swab, the anal swab, and the urine test, instead of the urine test, they'd take a urethral swab, which was really nasty and quite uncomfortable and put a lot of people off. So I really got to emphasize that that is not what happens. That it's a... Oh, you've also got the blood test as well. But as far as it goes, it's very much non-invasive. That it's rather fast to get, and you owe it to yourself as well as to all of your potential partners.
I'd actually like to hear from listeners, both positive and negative, if you've had any particular incidences where you've had somebody that is positive and how they approach play with people who identify as negative. Because through the friends I've met, they'll do either one of two things. The positive guys will either A, completely avoid negative guys because they like to play bareback and all that sort of stuff. And there are those that are the other extreme where if I'm going to play with anybody, it has to be safe regardless. So I'd like to know, although it might be shameless, which we'll point out that no names will be mentioned, would like to know if you've come across anybody who is HIV positive and how they approach sex. Because I personally would like to see a trend where everybody is protected, because as I was informed by a friend who just got HIV, there are different forms of it, and where you've got one strand which you have picked up, one strand can be treated, whereas if you play with somebody who's got a slightly different strand, potentially they could unite and become a super virus.
It almost sounds like something out of science fiction, really. Well,
it is, but it is quite realistic, and HIV is one thing, but people may not understand that there are different types of HIV, and this is where I'd like to know personally if people are aware of these potential complications beyond getting a form of HIV.
So what would you say to our listeners today which aren't fans of barrier methods?
That's fine. That's fine, but make sure that you are playing with people who feel the same way. Don't just use guilt or something to say, you know, oh, well, you know, if you thought I was attractive, you would do it with me, or, you know, just some pathetic little form of blackmail.
Or I can't top unless I haven't got one or anything like that. Yeah,
exactly.
But sexual health and taking care of yourself is, it's not as simple as simply just saying, slip on a condom and slap on some lube and you're done.
God, no. But I mean,
that the process of, it's mostly about harm minimization and being aware of what in any particular situation are the potential risks / benefits that could come from this. And I'm talking both in terms of a sexual health aspect, but as well as more of an informed consent, that it's all part of the same thing.
I'd just like to point out, whatever you do, know what you're getting into. It's your body. It is your body. You might be slim, sleek, tender, or you might be the world's largest chub. Nobody cares what you will be in 50 years if you contract HIV, if you decide that I'm not the best, and you go in the opposite direction. Know what you're getting yourself into. It's your body. Nobody else is going to look after it for you.
Just stop and think for 1 millisecond. It's 15 minutes of pleasure against the rest of your life. Here at the Cubby House, we want you to take risks and be playful, but not with your life.
That's right.
Well, we want you to be playful with your life, but, you know, just don't take risks.
But it's because there is access to highly active antiretroviral therapy, or HART. HART. Go planet.
Flag.
That's not flag. That's
Captain was Planet. Lame. That no, was lame.
No, it wasn't lame. I got it.
Anyway, I'm going to make my point that because of access to highly active antiretroviral therapies, people like to think that we are living in kind of like a post-HIV era, which I think is kind of, it's both correct and incorrect at the same time, that although the deadliness of the infection and what occurs afterward have been reduced considerably, it's not gone, and it does have quite a large effect on people's life, on people's mental health, the way that people feel about themselves, and it's something that I've personally encountered in amongst some people.
We're not just rambling for the sake of rambling, and we've got a 10-minute topic we need to discuss. We're concerned about our listeners. Hmm. We want them to be listening to the Cubby House for a long, long time to come.
We want them to be living long enough that we can meet them all one by one in person.
That's right, and have them on as guests, and have tea parties. Maybe not tea parties, maybe beer parties.
Orgy parties.
Oh, I was so going to use the W word then, but oh, just...
What's the W word?
WS.
No, not that one. The word that we're not allowed to talk about anymore.
Right.
Oh, LAN parties, yes.
Yeah, LAN parties, yeah. Or let's go for that one.
Also, I just want to clarify one major misconception when it comes to PEP, which is post-exposure prophylaxis. No, I don't think it's prophylactic, because what is a prophylactic?
It's a condom. Condom is a prophylactic. Mm. It's a safety device of some sort.
Well,
but not like a parachute or an airbag.
Well, at any rate, PEP is not a morning after pill. That it's not something that you can take and you're all better. That what it is, in fact, is a month-long series of full-strength anti-HIV medication or highly active antiretroviral therapy. And what it does is that it really takes a toll on a person's body, but the success of it has been quite well noted. But the fact that you've got to take the therapy within 72 hours of initial exposure, so it's very much tick-tock, tick-tock. And the sooner that you actually commence the treatment, the more effective it is likely to be. So you can generally, you should be able to go to any hospital, emergency room, and they'll have money set aside. So you can start PEP immediately.
Oh, when you said PEP, I thought it was like a new PlayStation, because it got PSP and now PEP.
I assure you, one is exceptionally more fun than the other.
Feedback.
Yes, talking about that word that we are no longer talking about, we have a message or two. Thank you very much, first of all, to Mr. Mike Downs. He reads, how about bagging World of Warcraft?
No, we can't talk about it.
For Cubby House. As amusing as bagging WoW is, and lordy knows barely any cubs or bears are geeky or enjoy playing games like WoW, 3 episodes of LOL, WoW players are addicts with no social skills, has gotten boring. Maybe you can mock gay men for going to nightclubs and drinking alcohol next.
You know what? You know what grinds my gears? Gay men going to nightclubs and drinking alcohol.
You know what grinds my gears?
What's up with that?
Sarcasm, the lowest form of wit.
Yes, sarcasm while drunk. My God, how often does that happen?
Yes.
I know he wasn't drunk, but yes, I do agree with you, Mike. It is a bit overdone, and so are guys getting drunk. My personal opinion there. So yes, thank you very much. We are done and dusted with WoW as of this podcast, except for the few occasional inserts we shall have, like we do in Simpsons.
However, there will not be a World of Warcraft flag.
No.
No.
Been there, done that. Thank you.
We've got a friend.
No, he doesn't.
He plays WoW.
Ha ha ha!
And also from Josh, who's written us a review on iTunes. He says, hi guys, I just wanted to say that the show is fantastic and I always look forward to listening to the next one. I think you are also 3 hot guys, but Ryan is my favourite.
He told me I was his favourite.
It's great to hear such a young, fresh approach to the bear community, and it's great news about the new Vic Bears committee lineup. Keep up the great work, guys, and don't give too hard a time about WoW. Thanks, Josh.
See, we're all positive. He's like, yay, Ryan's my fave. Yay for the new committee, which you are a part of, Jack. We couldn't be complete without you. And leave Cookie alone. Leave Brittany alone.
Yeah.
Any shout-outs?
I would actually like to shout out, first of all, to all those who have joined the Cub Horde Guild on WoW. I'd also like to shout out to the new Vic Bears committee and to those that came for the debate last fortnight ago. Thank you very much. We're still looking to get the photos and the video editing done and uploaded, so keep an ear and eye out for that one. But otherwise, thank you and keep listening. We do enjoy all your feedbacks.
Like I also would like to thank all those parties involved at the debates. Thank you for making a wonderful event. Of course, huge thanks go to Mark and Brett at the Laird for hosting us. Thank you very much, guys. The other guys that were on the debate themselves, K-Sara, Phil, Russell, and Dean. Also, a big thanks to Matt for supplying all the sounds, or for being the sound guy, and Steve for being the camera guy, and just everybody who came in and helped us celebrate our first anniversary, our first birthday of the Cubby House.
Yay! Right, we are 21. We are now 21, but with 1 year experience.
Mm. And, okay, it's going to be the last time I mention fucking WoW, okay? I'm sorry. I want to apologize to those people who I may have offended with topics. I don't think what I say stuff, so I apologize to all those people who have got upset or sooky or whatever about
what
I say.
For example, he's not actually thinking now.
That's
right. He's not really sorry at all.
No, on the outside, I'm like, oh, that was really sucky. And on the inside, I'm
I'd like to thank you for being with us for the past hour or so. It's been very warm and wonderful to have you here. I think we've shared something here today, and I think we've made a little bit of progress in your condition. It's called cubby house addiction, and it's not a bad thing, baby. And you can turn around now. He's gone. But he did take a video, and he is uploading it to XTube. And you'll never find it. There's just too many videos there.
And just quickly before we wrap up, just one more thing I wanted to throw in. On the VicBears website, there have been the application form for Grampians has come up.
Woo!
So, Cookie, you're going to come. So, you need to, other everybody else, you need to be there. We want to see you.
He is. You and I are going.
Yes.
So, we'd like to meet everybody
else. We want everybody there. We want this to be like one massive, just huge.
And it will not be an orgy. For whatever you think, it is not related to sex.
Well, it can be. If you want it to be, but it's not.
What happens between closed doors stay there, really.
That's right.
That's right.
It's, what do you say? What happens in Bizarro World stays in Bizarro World.
It's not band camp, it's school camp.
It's bear camp.
We're camp bears.
But we don't talk about what happens at band camp.
No, that's what I'm saying. Bizarro World, you know, that what's that show you made me watch? Drawn Together, see, I was quoting that. Aha. Just come to Grampians and we'll actually give you more entertaining conversation than that last 30 seconds.
Yes. Final big shout out to Coach Beth. Thank you very much. You just sent us a very nice big, hope you have a nice recording. Thank you very much. We'll give you big hugs later.
Yay. Other than that, I'm Ryan.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Jack.
And we hope you enjoyed show 21.
21.
Yay, we're legal. Ah, ha, ha, got it.
Cubby House was made in conjunction with Joy 94.9. For more podcasts, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.